informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, it is the fifth day of Texans Christmas. It's my day because I'm the middle guy. You guys got all the good days. You got Brendan leading us off, and then God, you, the closer, the Mariano Rivera.
Right.
You think the second day is better than the third day? You're out of your mind.
I think the first day is the best day because then you can just blast away and get the bet with no competition. You get the pick of anything.
To be fair, we saved the best one for you. You're the one who picked Jack Easterby must go. I think that's the best one. Yeah, I thought you were going to save it to last.
Yeah,
I really thought you were going to.
I thought one of you guys were going to be a-holes and take it from me, so I just had to get it out there.
We probably should have spent a little bit more time in prep on that. But anyways, the first day of Texans Christmas, we asked for a franchise quarterback. Second day, legal resolution to the Deshaun Watson saga. Third day, Jack Easterby must go. Lose the next two is day four. And today, on the fifth day of Texans Christmas, I want to trade down in the first round of the 2022 NFL draft. Texans are going to pick top three, right? Currently in the top three, number three spot. They play Jacksonville next week after Seattle. That one's going to have huge draft implications. You're hoping that Campbell can get another victory in Detroit. Maybe you can finish as high as number one. I don't care. It's probably safe to say the Texans are going to pick in the top five, right? Like, that's fair to say. They're going to be picking in the top five.
Mm-hmm.
So my fifth day of Texans Christmas, a trade down in the first round. Did a little homework on this. If you look at the last 5 years, picks that have been top five picks that have been traded. There were two last year. Miami traded number three overall to San Francisco for the number 12 pick, a 2022 first and third, and then a 2023 first round pick. They got three first for number three overall.
Fantastic and phenomenal, but that was in a quarterback heavy.
It's Trey Lance, though. You're going to tell me Kenny Pickett can't turn into Trey Lance?
Matter. What it means is the value of the entire draft in those picks goes way up when it's a very, very quarterback heavy draft.
If there's a quarterback there that if somebody falls in love with, you're going to get more than what that normal pick would be. I think it's possible somebody could fall in love with Kenny Pickett. I think it's possible somebody could fall in love with Matt Corral. I think it's possible. Possible. Yeah. But, I mean, you have number three Miami, got three first-rounders for Miami. You would take that in a heartbeat if you're the Texans, right?
As you as the manager and director of research and development, that was fantastic in bringing to the table that kind of data. I'm leery of the fact that those things happen when there's a demand and it's about it quarterbacks.
Demand pops up anywhere, though.
This year, I just don't see the guys Pickett and Corral moving the needle enough to say. Now, I mean, I think that definitely it's still definitely what we both feel is the best move for the Texans. Even if you get a future one or a future two and a three, and you're still going to have the top at some position group to get on your roster and what you need more than anything else, which is as many assets as you can possibly get.
Yeah, you're not looking for best available, or you're not looking for just whoever's there at number one or two. You're looking for as much as you can possibly accrue for whatever you got. Trey Lance, by the way, went number three. Of course, we know that to San Francisco. The 12th pick was Micah Parsons. So not only did Miami trade down, they ended up moving that pick, but the 12th pick was better than the third pick anyways. Also last year, this isn't top five, but it's close enough. Philadelphia had the number six pick overall. They traded that to Miami, that and a fifth round pick to Miami for number 12 overall, a fourth rounder, and then plus a 2022 first round pick. So again, another trade down. That's not a quarterback. You're trading number six for six picks lower and an additional first. You do that as well if you're the Texans, don't you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Any and all possibilities should not only be considered, and most times they should be accepted by getting competition involved. So taking of those two, even if you meet in the middle somewhere, but you get three and four extra picks, yes, yes, and yes. And that's not even up for discussion. Just do it, because you're still going to keep a pick in the first round, which is going to get you a player that you sorely need at some position group because you need so many of them. But those extra picks and the multitude of the ones you're getting, you got to do that.
2020, there wasn't a top five pick traded. 2019, there wasn't a top five pick traded. The previous one before last season, you have to go back to 2018. The Colts traded the number three overall pick to the Jets for number six. So they only traded down three spots. They got two second rounders that year and then a second rounder the next year. So they moved down three spots from three to six. They added three second rounders. Would you do that if you're the Texans?
Again. Yes, yes, and yes.
Now, that back then, the Jets took Sam Darnold third overall. The Colts got Quentin Nelson six, so they got a better player trading down, and they added three second-rounders.
Yeah.
Josh Allen went seventh that year, by the way. And in 2017, Allen went back 5 years. This is the last one.
Of those second-round picks, was one of them this last draft?
It would have been two second-rounders in 19 and then a second in 2020.
Otherwise, it would have been Jonathan Taylor.
Well, that was 2020, right? Because Jonathan Taylor's not a rookie. It's a second year. Oh, so it probably right. Yeah, so was Jonathan Taylor.
So you got two outstanding players at two different position groups.
For Sam Darnold.
Wow.
And then in 2017, everybody remembers this trade. San Francisco traded number two to Chicago for number three. They also added a third, a fourth, and a third the following year. The Bears took Mitch Trubisky, number two. Now, the Niners took Solomon Thomas, number three. But also in that draft, the Texans drafted Deshaun 12th that year. Remember, the Texans gave away a first that year, a first next year. Pat Mahomes went in the 10th, and the Chiefs had the same type of trade where they traded a first that draft and then a first the previous year. And then Christian McCaffrey also was in that draft. He went number eight. Meanwhile, the Bears took Trubisky, Bears number two.
Yeah.
So, I mean, trading down just seems better because it seems like there's better players like between 5 and 12 as opposed to like whoever you're reaching for in the top two.
It's
top
not
three.
As bad as the NBA, but with the NFL draft, it's becoming more hit and miss than it used to be where there were surefire, sure things in the top 7 to 8 picks. But that's just another reason why we're from a reality standpoint. This is where take your red, white, and blue drawers off for a second, Texans fans, and realize from a business perspective, from a long-term perspective of football for the Texans, this is the absolute right thing to do. There isn't that one guy that you can't do without in the top 1, 2, 3, 4. There are several guys that are going to be available no matter where you pick. But the fact that you can stockpile multiple picks in multiple years for the future, think about how difficult and painful it was when you didn't have a first and second round pick, or you were missing picks across the board. Be the team that has all the picks and then some, because even those thirds and seconds could give you more picks along the way, because as those picks come up and guys slide, teams are going to be like, whoa, I got to have that guy. I'll call Houston and give them a third next year and something else again.
I mean, you could quickly acquire a lot of draft picks just by having a top three pick, and I think trading down is the obvious way to go. And, like, if you look at it, too, from, like, and we don't really know a lot about Nick Caserio as a drafter yet. I somewhat like the draft he just had, and I say that with a little bit of, like, a grain of salt because his best pick was in the third round, and he drafted Davis Mills with the first pick he ever had. And then how much was he involved in the New England draft, right? Like, the Patriots before this year never really had great drafts, like in the last 5 to 7 seasons. How much was he involved in the selection of players? Probably not a ton, because Bill Belichick, I feel like, is a micromanager that wants control of everything. But just think of it from, like, a math perspective. Not every pick you make is going to hit, right? Like, there's going to be busts, and it doesn't even matter where you're picking. Like, if you're picking in the top three, there's going to be busts in the top three almost every single year. There's going to be top three busts pretty often in the NFL in any draft whatsoever. So if you use that pick to trade down a little bit, and all of a sudden you can turn that one pick into three or four, even though it's further down in the draft, you increase the likelihood of those picks hitting, right? Or finding somebody from that one spot. So the Texans don't trade down with as many holes as they have. I'm going to hold that against Nick Caserio. That's going to be a huge red flag for me as I evaluate him as a general manager.
I'm totally with you on it. And the thing is at least we don't have to worry about it crossing Cal's desk, because nothing will other than a video game controller or a lunch menu. That's the thing, that when you're running this franchise, that you know Nick basically is sitting on about as much power as Bill O'Brien had at the peak of Bill O'Brien. You just hope he does something better with it, and he's more involved, more interested in getting more people involved in the decision so that they don't screw it up. Because like I said, it's not as surefire as the draft used to be, that, you know, when you go draft to draft, year to year, and some of the research I did, aside from like a Tony Mandarich one year where the Packers swung and missed, and the rest of that entire top half of that draft were successful long-term NFL players, it's not that surefire anymore. That's why you got to trust your personnel department. That's why you got to lean on your scouts. That's why you've got to have multitudes of meetings to talk about from position group to position group and player to player who has more value, who has the guy that has a better chance to hit, and make sure you make the right picks. That's why I think it was a blessing in disguise that he didn't have a first and a second this last year, because he had to get his feet wet in a draft. And like you said, it wasn't a disaster. He did some good things. But now, after a year of getting, you didn't want him to have his first draft, never having done a draft where he was in total control before, when you had all these picks where if he misstepped here or there, it had a larger long-term ramification.
I get the point, but I would have rather had the picks. Like, I mean, you'd rather have a first and second on this team.
Of course, you always would rather have a first
fearful
and second.
Yeah.
But based on where we are in terms of the fear factor for overall Nick Caserio, I'd rather have said, okay, let's do it right this year.
The Rockets, as we switch gears, Rockets red hot, 6 in a row. They're 7-16 on the season. They don't play again until tomorrow night. They welcome James Harden into the Toyota Center. That'll be interesting to see how the fans react to James Harden as he comes into town. Silas was asked after their latest victory on what's different during the winning streak.
experience, I would say. You know, at the beginning, we didn't really know what we were doing. We hadn't been through those experiences. We had just had training camp, and then we had game after game after game with guys who hadn't been through those moments. And the more we do it, the better we get at it. Yeah, it's still super early in the season. So, you know, we were turning the ball over like you can't believe earlier in the season, just because we were not familiar with each other, not familiar with how we play. And we're slowly but surely getting to a point where we're not turning it over as much, and we are executing down the stretch.
I saw you kind of get the attention there when Silas said we didn't know what we were doing early on. How come that grabbed your attention the way that it did?
For a multitude of reasons. One, you're the head coach. It's your job to make sure they know what they're doing and to put the right combinations out there, so at least you have more guys on the floor that do than don't until you kind of get the growing pains out of the way. And then the other one is the easy one now to pick at, but I started doing this before anybody else. Jalen Green. Jalen Green, when you handed him the keys to the entire franchise and promoted him and celebrated him before he even stepped foot on an NBA court, you weren't taking into consideration that with his age and experience and lack of physical strength, that he was going to slip up. This was going to be a very, very painful growing pain early on. I'm not saying he's not going to end up being a franchise player for this franchise and being a lot of the things that a lot of people have in terms of expectations for him for his career. I'm saying that from a management coaching perspective and from the standpoint of this team this year, it probably wasn't smart to give him everything right away.
Yeah. Did you catch this article in the Paper City magazine by Chris Baldwin, who's the most talented writer in the city? He's outstanding. But Fertitta,
really?
He's great.
I'm not familiar with him.
He's the best in the city. I mean that. Fertitta sat down with Chris Baldwin, wrote a story about Fertitta and his vision on the Rockets. And long story short, Fertitta says he's standing by the current plan led by GM Raphael Stone. He says, look, you know, we have a plan. We're rebuilding. We have a lot of young guys. He said, it's very hard. I like to win, but I understand that this is a process. And the biggest mistake you can make is we could bring in a bunch of veterans with these young guys and win more games, but it's not the right process. Basically, it's the Philadelphia model. Trust the process. What we're saying, embrace the suck, right? Yeah. And for me, I agree with it. Like, this is a way to – you don't want to be stuck in purgatory. Like, you want to bring in young talent. The best way to bring in young talent is to have high picks in the NBA draft.
So with that being said, he also kind of led you to believe that they should be playing, and some comments came out that he believes they should be playing the younger guys more than the veterans. Then why'd you spend all the money on Daniel Theis? Because he's not going to play. You're going to try and trade him now because he doesn't fit. And obviously, Şengün has developed quicker than you thought.
That's probably why.
And that's why, you know, everybody's clamoring for more minutes for Şengün anyway. But we had said all along the four 19-year-olds coupled with the second year of Tate and some of the younger guys you already had on the roster, Brooks and otherwise, you wanted to see what you had. They needed to be on the floor anyway. And that's why I said they didn't have the right mix of veterans. I thought Eric Gordon should have been gone before the season even started. Now you got to capitalize and pounce because his stock is up again. Before it drops down again and he does another one of those arms flailing on every play that he doesn't get a call overnight, you got to try and get rid of him. The fact that you're playing a Christian Wood, and like I said, I'm not crapping on anything with the Rockets. Christian Wood is taking minutes and shots and opportunities away from these young kids you're trying to develop, and you're not trying to make the playoffs this year. Again, I hate to break it to you Rockets fans with the red Kool-Aid this time, but the big plan says you need to embrace the kind of suck with more of, you still have a plan, you have a structure, and you have a roster that says you should be quicker along, and it just shouldn't take as long as the Texans. You still got to stick with that plan too. That's why at some point when the dog days hit us, we should do a split screen, and we should do good moves Raphael Stone has made and bad moves Rosetta Stone has made. Because when you look at him, I credit him for finding Jayshon Tate. I saw people giving him credit for finding Matthews. Great. But I still think he completely crapped the bed on the Westbrook and Harden trades. And there were other missteps. I credit him for what he did for the draft and finagling his way into getting four 19-year-old kids. Even if they all don't hit, I credit those moves. But you got to be fair in your analysis, and you got to call it like you see it both ways. There's going to be swings and misses. There's going to be home runs. Right now, it's pretty even back and forth.
Yeah. 713-780-ESPN. How do you stand on the Rockets? 713-780-3776. When we return, Lance McCullers update on the Astros on the verge of losing their best coach. That's next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Before we go to the break, I want to tell you about Doc Linville. I believe in Doc Linville, people. I don't speak for people and companies that I don't believe in, and I am living proof that Doc Linville knows what he's doing. So is John Granato. So is Fred Fowler. So is a lot of guys here at the station. Because Doc Linville can make a difference in your life by getting your hairline back or returning hair to places where you thought you could never have it again. It's all done naturally with the NeoGraft process. It's your own hair repurposed in areas where you need more of it or don't have any of it. All you got to do is go to 975hair.com. You can get all the details and figure out how it works. I had the procedure done in late September. It's supposed to be 6 to 9 months before you see the maximum results, but there's a 95% success rate. Right now, with every passing day, I see thicker, deeper follicles. My old hairline, the line is still there, and I see the follicles developing on a daily basis. There's no foams. There's no sprays. There's no creams. There's no gimmicks. This is your own hair, and it doesn't leave a big zipper scar in the back of your head like some of the athletes you've seen that have tried and experimented with this kind of procedure in the past, but not the NeoGraft. Doc Linville's the best at it. He's mastered it with the NeoGraft process, and he can take care of you too. As an ESPN listener, it is a free consultation that normally costs $150 to sit down with you and answer your questions and see if it's right for you too. Check it out right now. Go to 975hair.com, get the details, get the free appointment, and figure out if you could be next in line to get your hairline back.
ESPN 97.5. Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Get into the Christmas spirit during our 12 Days of Giving, sponsored by Circle Saw. On the second day, we'd like to give back to Habitat for Humanity. It brings the Houston area together to build homes, communities, and hope. We're encouraging you, our wonderful listeners, to head to ESPN975.com/12days to give what you can. Plus, David Gao, CEO of Gao Media, has generously agreed to match donations to each charity up to $500. So head to ESPN975.com/12days to make your donation to Habitat for Humanity now. No donation will go unnoticed. Give you the Lance McCullers update in just a moment. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Chef Jay, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees.
What's going on, fellas? I just want to call, you know, I read an article. It came across my Facebook feed today, and it talked about how, you know, we need to keep that same energy when it comes to Steven Silas doing a winning streak as we did when they were losing. But, you know, what I don't want us to do is to get lost in a winning streak and not hold him accountable for the mistakes and the situations that are happening. Because my issue with Silas is that I don't believe this winning streak was coaching. I believe we just were shooting the ball well. And teams at times, as you guys know in the NBA, teams get hot. The ball starts going in, players get hot, shooting percentages go up, and that leads into winning games, especially with the schedule that we had. But my issue with the Rockets is that they still suck at situational basketball. And situational basketball is what wins your games, and situational basketball is what should be coached during practice. And when you look at a lot of these games, these guys get to the end of the game and they just start jacking up shots when you're up by 10 with 3 minutes to go. That's something that should be coached. That's something that should be talked about. These guys are still not knowing the plays. If you notice, I watch these games to the teeth. Sometimes I watch them two or three times. And the guys are still not knowing the plays on the court. The guys are still not knowing where they're supposed to be. And these are things that are supposed to be coached. These are the things that Silas needs to be driving into these guys' heads. Because I guarantee you, no matter how well we shoot the ball, if we don't know where we're supposed to be tonight, we're going to get blown out. All right? And then my second thought is, what do you guys think about, you know, having Jalen Green come off the bench when he comes back? Because the way Matthews is balling, man, that kid is special. I see something in him that the Rockets haven't had in a long time. You know, it's been a while since we had a three-point shooter who can come off the screen and just pull up like the way he did. All right, guys. Appreciate it, man.
Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate the call. Where do you want to start?
Start with Jalen.
I've said all along about Jalen Green. Look, I've pointed it out. It's all a process. It's a learning process, right? So part of the learning process is you take your lumps. Also, sometimes the best instruction comes from your own eyes when you're sitting out. We said that KPJ, when he sat out, learned some things. He was able to watch from a very close range and realize he wasn't playing the position the right way and doing things to make his team good as well as get him what he needed to get. He was playing the game differently. That's what you hope Jalen Green sees too. That's why I pointed out the subliminal messages in all the post-game conferences after they were winning games about, hey, the ball isn't sticky anymore. We're not seeing as much isolation. We're moving it, getting to the guy, the open shot. Jalen Green is a special talent, but sometimes those talents fail if they don't pick up what's been being put down. You hope he comes back and he takes his first baby steps of progress in terms of real. He doesn't have to do it all by himself. He's got help. And the other thing, before we get to the second point, that I want to point out is, because there's a discussion going on Twitch, I never said from the standpoint when I said that when the Rockets got those four young 19-year-olds, I said, you got to see what you have. I said, everybody was worried about and thinking already that the backcourt of the future and the two franchise players were KPJ and now Jalen Green. I said, Şengün's probably not a franchise player. But I said, if the comparisons are Scola and Omer Asik and guys like that, if he's just a combination of those two guys, he's all that you could ever need or ask for the next 7 to 10 years.
He's a solid piece for sure.
No question.
He's got a place in the NBA. I don't know if he's ever going to be like in the NBA first teams, right? Like, his ceiling is somewhat limited. So do you think Jalen should come off the bench? Because I don't. Like, I mean, this is
no.
the guy you
no,
drafted
no, no, no,
number
no, no,
two.
No,
he's your
no.
star. You start him. Now, the other thing that Chef Jay said, that they play with, like, lack of discipline and they have bad situational awareness, things like that. I agree with that. Like, Jalen Green the other day before he got hurt, he took a step back three with like 18 seconds on the shot clock and hit it. And everybody's praising him. Oh, what a wonderful shot by Jalen Green. That's outstanding. And maybe this is just my ignorance when it comes to the NBA game. I saw that shot and I'm like, man, that's a bad shot. You don't want to make a living doing that in the NBA. Like, it's one thing if Steph Curry does that, because everything Steph Curry takes is a good shot. It's not a good shot whenever you're a bad three-point shooter. That made me cringe.
Yep.
And everybody else is celebrating.
No, and you're right. And you know, savvy basketball people, when they see that, no, look, there's a better shot to be had. It's not to say that he couldn't make it sometimes. It's the fact that when you start talking percentages, when numbers come up with analytics as much as they come up, here's a guy that when he's struggling or he's not shooting the ball particularly well, has an ability that not a lot of guys have. With his length, his quickness, his speed, his hops, he can go to the rack. If he doesn't finish, he gets fouled. Sometimes he finishes and gets fouled. Then he starts feeling a little bit more confidence. He gets some momentum going. Then the shots start falling on a regular basis. And also, in the meantime, when you know your shot's not falling, what you're supposed to do is play within the context of the system. Get the teammates involved. Get easy baskets. When you guys get up 10, 15 points, that builds confidence too, and that gets you feeling free and easy about making your shots. So from the Rockets' perspective and from a Silas perspective, look, I don't knock Stephen Silas. I like him just like a lot of people like David Culley, and I think David Culley's a nice guy. Silas knows the game. The thing is, it's not. I'm not ready to close the door on Silas, and I think that this winning streak is as much a victim of the schedule and Jalen being out as anything in terms of saying, look, these people that are jumping on the bandwagon, they got the longest current winning streak in the NBA. Okay, well, we just saw the Warriors and the Suns streaks end, so therefore, those were the two best streaks in the league.
And against each other, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you look at it from a Rockets perspective, the schedule's going to say a lot in the next 10 games because it's the gauntlet. It's the Nets and the Lakers and so many other good teams along the way. We'll see what they really are. But it's okay because just like with Silas, you don't need the next guy to take you to the next level yet. And he knows enough basketball and he's coached Luka and offensively got Luka going in the right direction that it's not all on him one way or the other. It's just as part of the being patient. Everybody's going to jump the highs and they're going to jump the lows and realize just keep an even keel.
Yeah, you got to read the 82. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. When we return, Brad Nessler, the SEC voice on CBS, he'll be joining us next on the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about Apollo Men's Health. Love Apollo Men's Health because, again, it's a company doing wonders for people in Houston. Every time in the lobby, and I go in weekly on Fridays, every time I'm in the lobby, the guys are telling me, hey, man, I didn't even know about this place till I heard you talk about it. Now that I'm here and I'm going here on a regular basis, it's made an unbelievable difference in my life. It can do it for you, too. And it starts with hormone therapy. If you don't have the energy and the drive that you once had, you can get it back again. And there's multiple ways that you can get involved with hormone therapy. And it's for men and women, too. Women are coming in there. And we saw, Jeremy and I saw, multiple women come in when we do the live remotes at Apollo Men's Health because they're capitalizing as well. If you want to get on a workout program with the New Year's resolutions coming up, take better care of yourself, start with a full body composition analysis. It takes 60 seconds, and then it gives you all kinds of results about you where you can chart your progress on a weekly basis and make sure that you're going in the right direction. You want to recover quicker because you're sore, or maybe you had an accident and your knees or your shoulders aren't reacting. HGH peptide therapy can get you back where you need to be. From the boardroom to the weight room to the bedroom, your health is your wealth. You have to invest in yourself. It starts with the people at Apollo Men's Health. Make that first appointment. Go to ApolloMH.com. When you do, you're going to find out most major insurances accepted discounts for military personnel and first responders. The main thing is two locations near downtown Houston. Make the appointment and then be honest with them when they ask you the tough questions. If you give them honest answers, they're going to get your results and put you on a program that works. Check them out today. It's the good people at Apollo Men's Health.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Warrior sound! Real. Fun. Sports. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Joining us now on the HRP guest line, Brad Nessler, the top SEC voice on CBS. Brad, thanks so much for joining us. You join us on a week in which Alabama and Georgia going to the college football playoff. Alabama looked outstanding. I'm curious your thoughts on what you saw from both of these teams.
I was a little bit surprised, guys, from the course of the season and how Georgia handled their business and how really they, 10 of their 12 wins were by 24 points or more. So I thought this was their time to get Alabama. That shows you what I know. And, I had Alabama the week before in the Iron Bowl, and, they did not look good at all until the last drive in the overtime. And so I didn't think they could get things fixed that quickly, but it's amazing what you can do when you got a quarterback as talented as the guy they got playing back there. And, their line held up and kept Georgia off Bryce Young. And if you keep Bryce Young upright, even if you're not completely keeping him upright, he's going to do some pretty special things, and that's basically what we found out Saturday.
Brad, big fan. Appreciate all you've done for the longevity of your career, especially with college football. So I'm really happy to have you on the show. I got to ask you, because everybody is obviously picking it apart this week, are you good with the Final Four, the positions they're in, and the matchups that we have?
Yeah, I am. And thank you for saying that about me. I appreciate it. I'm pretty good with everything. I don't know how it could have been any different. I know, the outcomes of the games the other night, had they changed things. I mean, Oklahoma State's literally an inch away from winning that game, and that might have changed things. I think Notre Dame fans are disappointed, but they had to have things fall their way for that to happen. And Cincinnati earned it. You go and beat everybody. I don't care where you're playing. And especially, by virtue of their win over Notre Dame, they were in the driver's seat, I thought, to do that. So I'm good, and I'm not trying to be an SEC guy, but that's what I cover all year long. But, Georgia was too good all season long to take anything away from them. And then to get, basically their butt handed to them by Alabama, you got to give it to Alabama that, they were, remember, against Texas A&M, they had a touchdown lead in the fourth quarter, and then they lost on a field goal at the buzzer. So, while they didn't dominate like they normally do or like they did a year ago, and they had a lot of close wins, they earned those wins. They were tough. So I'm good with everything. In Michigan, I don't get to see a lot, and I didn't get to see the Iowa game, and I know they completely crushed the Hawkeyes. And, you couple that with what they did against Ohio State, and give them credit, give Harbaugh credit. They deserve to be there. So I'm good with all four of the teams, and I think it's a nice mixture. I know they're – a lot of people would say, well, why can't we have one more conference in there? Well, they weren't good enough. ACC and the Big 12 and the Pac-12 weren't good enough. So if you're looking at Power 5 conferences, why isn't there somebody represented? Go out and win the games. Otherwise, shut up.
Follow up there before we go in another direction. If you ideally had your way on the next coming of the playoff, is it 8? Is it 12? Is it, what specifics do you think have to be in a deal?
First of all, I think they have to figure out, how to get along the commissioners, and that's going to be a sore spot to begin with because there's too many hurt feelings over the Oklahoma-Texas thing coming into the SEC. Everybody was blindsided a little bit by that, and so I think you've got a group of athletic directors and presidents and all that who aren't real happy with each other right now. And so the fact that they have to get along first to try to figure things out, spent a long time with Greg Sankey on, when was it, Friday late afternoon, and he went through every scenario that he's laid out for him, and he's pretty well-informed guy and pretty intelligent guy, and I think everybody maybe doesn't look up to him, but, you know, he's one of the leaders of the pack for sure. And, you know, there's just too many arguments among the conferences right now to come to any common ground. The Pac-12 wants, you know, an automatic qualifier or a conference champion, whether they're 8-3 or whatever. And, you know, thanking some of the other commissioners are going, that's not cool. You know, you gotta be better than that. If you can be in the top 10, I think if they could come to a common ground and say, okay, we'll take the conference champ, but you have to be like in the top 10. So at least it looks right on paper that you're playing these teams and, you know, one's playing, well, 1-2 and whatever, whoever's going to get a bye, however they're going to do it. I think it's just too complicated right now to know what they want, 8 or 12. I think 12 is probably the best idea. Anything bigger than that's crazy. And if you get smaller than that, that might not work out. And from what I understand, the Big Ten doesn't want to play home games, which I don't get it, unless they're worried about the pipes freezing in their bathrooms in the stadium. I don't know what their problem is. I mean, I would want to play, if I was Michigan or Ohio State, man, I would love to play in January at the Big House or the Horseshoe or something. And their commissioner apparently doesn't want to do that. So there's just so many different arguments that people don't know about that are in the background. And until they can kind of get that straightened out and come to some sort of common denominator, I don't know how they're ever going to figure it out. But I'd say, you know, if I was going to throw a number out, I'd say 12, and that's plenty.
Brad Nessler, CBS play-by-play sportscaster for SEC football, is our guest on the HRMP guest line. Brad, you're the voice of a lot of young men's youth, to be honest with you. If you go back to the old NCAA video game, they're bringing it back. I don't know if you're going to be on it or not, but do you have any good stories about what it was like to voice the former NCAA franchise?
Yeah, it was a lot of work, guys. when we first started out, you know, it was, I think I was contracted to do at least anywhere from 3 to 5 days of recording, and that meant 8-hour days. And so we had to start at the very beginning and literally come up with every conceivable play you could have from every conceivable yard line. So if you think about that, if you just do off tackle from the 1 yard line and you're going 99 yards in the other direction, you guys do the math. I don't know how many lines of copy I did before we ever got around to even doing the names of the teams. And then you go through the phone book, and that was their way of doing it. You could use any name you wanted to if you could find it in the phone book at the time, because there was no NIL or, you know, Ed O'Bannon came in and kind of messed up the whole thing. I don't care, because I was about done doing the basketball anyway. Dick and I, Vitale and I did the basketball, and it wasn't nearly as good a game as the football. No offense to the writers and producers. But anyway, you know, there were some long days, and I would have to tell, you know, the producers, I say, okay, guys, you know, I can't do like 10 99-yard plays in a row. I'll lose my voice before we get to lunchtime. So we had to kind of mix it up. And then over the course of years, at times they would show me the game, and I would just do play-by-play without any copy written in front of me, and they go, wow, that even sounds better. You know, it's almost like that's how you do it. And I go, well, that's kind of like how I do it, you know. And so in the later stages, they got around to, they would say, hey, here's our situation. They'd tell Kirk and I, it's 3rd down and 7 from the 40-yard line. Just make something up. And Kirk and I would look at each other and go, hey, you're not paying us enough to write this stuff and make this stuff up and record it. So that's kind of a synopsis of over the years how it evolved and, you know, how we did so many different years of it. But, yeah, I'm glad it's coming back for the next generation of kids, but it won't be me on the game, I'm pretty sure.
I wish it would have been, you got paid by the word. I'm sure you did, too. That would have made it a lot easier for doing all the phone book and everything else. I got to ask you before we let you go, because I know we're on a time crunch here, but because of all your history and all of the games and all the different partners and all the different teams you've worked with, if you had to call it, and I know it might be too difficult to say, if Brad Nessler got to call one game with his ideal dream team, who is the analyst? Who's the sideline reporter? And, of course, if there's honorable mentions of whatever you wanted it.
Oh, wow. That's horrible. I would have a 4-man booth.
Okay.
It'd be me and Bob Greasy and Gary Danielson and Todd Blackledge. And then we'd have Swanee on the sideline on one sideline, Jamie Erdahl on the other sideline. And, yeah, that'd be pretty good. That'd be not bad. It'd be kind of crowded. We'd be fighting for words. And then I'd probably have Paul McGuire somewhere up in the end zone in one of the camera expansions or somewhere on a camera, and he's just throwing comments in just whatever he feels like.
That's outstanding.
Brad, great stuff. Thanks for taking a few minutes to talk with us, and have fun with the Army-Navy broadcast this week.
Hey, it's the hardest game I do every year, guys, and I'm buried in it right now, so I'm going to get back to it, but it's fun talking to you guys.
Likewise. Brad Nessler, CBS play-by-play sportscaster for the SEC, their top college voice, will be on the Army-Navy broadcast this week as well. I have a little bit of PTSD when it comes to Brad Nessler. He was on the Jordan Poole game. He was on the Jordan Poole game. He was on the game. Great game in the first round, too, when we beat San Diego State. But, definitely have that negative condition when it comes to Nessler, but one of the best to ever do it. I love Brad Nessler.
I think that right now, and it's kind of like when you talk about sports with kids growing up, and they want you to pick one sport at an early age and just stick to it.
Yeah,
it's such a blessing for us as viewers, but also such a rare skill set these days to have the guy that can cross over to multitude of sports. Mike Tirico is still one of the best that's still doing it. Costas did it forever. But Nestler's one of those guys that he can cross over no matter what game he's calling. He can make it better by what he brings to the table, by the way he creates and sets the game action for you. And that's why I think he's so good. People were saying, well, you know what? He's not the GOAT. Keith Jackson's always going to be the GOAT. He doesn't have to be, because he carved out his own career doing it his way, and he's legendary. You mentioned the video game.
Yeah.
But when you talk about the top games every single week for year after year, decade after decade, Brad Nessler played a role in those college basketball and football.
Yeah, he did. He's got a great voice, too, which is something that
he does.
Right? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. As great as he is, something he said that I disagree with. Also, Joel thinks a college football dynasty is dead. What dynasty? Is he right? That's next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, guys, before we go to the break, I want to tell you right now that there's still hope for you to find the right Christmas gift this year without having to hit the malls and do all the sales and stand in all the lines. You can get a gift that keeps on giving, if you know what I mean. It's a gift for her that will also benefit you. All you got to do is go to pajamagram.com. They've got a multitude of different pajamagram sets that you can choose from, lingerie and straight pajamas. And now, in case you don't know, it's like wearing nothing at all for her. Mm-hmm. Soft, silky, naturally nude pajamas available exclusively at Pajamagram. Yep. Smooth, unbelievably comfortable to the touch, we'll say. And it's soft just like skin, and even more alluring than lingerie. The texture and touch of these pajamas is so seductive, you'll both love the feel of them. Leave nothing to the imagination, because they're naturally nude pajamas. She'll love the feeling of wearing next to nothing, and so will you. Uh-huh, wink, wink. All this at pajamagram.com. Plus, they do the gift wrapping free for you. Saves you that as well. Make sure that's delivery by Christmas. Perfect for you and for her. Order today. They're going to include a free matching naturally nude nightie with the purchase of naturally nude pajamas. So it's a double dose of a gift that keeps on giving. Free gift packaging, free nightie, and the jammies. It's a year filled with unexpected gifts. Get her something she can count on, and you can too. Order now, because you don't want to have them sold out before Christmas. All you got to do, go to pajamagram.com right now. That's pajamagram.com right now. Order naturally nude pajamas. Tell them Joel Blank sent you by.
You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Great having Brad Nessler on. A couple things that he said that I wanted to mention, but first I want to remind you to get into the Christmas spirit during our 12 Days of Giving, sponsored by Circle Saw. On the second day, we'd like to give back to Habitat for Humanity, who brings the Houston area together to build homes, communities, and hope. We're encouraging you, our wonderful listeners, to head to ESPN975.com/12days to give what you can. Plus, David Gal, CEO of Gal Media, has generously agreed to match donations to each charity up to $500. So head to ESPN975.com/12days to make your donation to Habitat for Humanity now. No donation will go unnoticed. So Nestler saying that talking about the playoff and expanding the playoff, mentions 12 is the number. I believe 12 is the number just because of the, you know, reading the tea leaves. I'm fine with 8 or 12, just an expanded playoff. It's my most important thing. Didn't love the idea about him saying that you should win your conference title and finish in the top 10 to get an automatic qualifier. I didn't like that point. To me, like, win your conference if it's a Power 5 automatic spot. Like, give me real qualifiers. Stop putting it into the rankings. I don't care about what the AP says. I don't care what the College Football Committee led by Gary Bartz, the Iowa AD, has to say. Go win a tough league. You win a tough league, you get a seat at the table, and then you fill it out from there.
Yeah, that's where I'm at, too. I don't think that you can have that too many precursors from that regard, right? If you are, and I will say lucky enough, because a lot of times it's just the way the schedule rolls and when the matchups happen from a ranking standpoint. But if you win your conference championship, then I believe you get a seat at the table. But it shouldn't preclude someone that has had a great year all season long in your conference that loses a game late when everybody got their loss out of the way early from being invited to the dance. That's why I'm more in line with 12, just to make sure that we're not leaving one Cinderella story out. You can't do what basketball does and do March Madness and 64 to 68 teams. So you just want to make sure that those that legitimately have unequivocally, they deserve a shot, get their chance, so we don't sit there and go, well, they got screwed. And then from there, you have to make sure that you get the right teams that are deserving, and you can't sit there and say they have to have both of those prerequisites to be in.
It's interesting, too. He said the Big Ten doesn't want to play campus home games. That's kind of bizarre to me. If you're in Michigan or you're in Ohio State, and say you get like
you're
a team from the SEC, Wisconsin, and you get a team in the SEC who's like got a bunch of speed dudes, bunch of athletic dudes, like what are you hoping for there? You're hoping for a snowstorm.
A sludge fest.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, why wouldn't the Big Ten want to play those campus home games? The only thing, it's got to be weather-related, but
but that's
sense.
The first I've heard of it. That's why I said when you and I were even talking about looking at NFL standings, and I go, oh, my God, it's 1 degree at Lambeau Field today. That's why the Packers want home and need home field advantage. If you're Wisconsin, Ohio State, Michigan State, Iowa, you want them coming to your place, especially if it's a tight game, if it's like a 50-50 pick'em kind of a game in terms of how the people are looking at a matchup. The advantage could be you take a team from the South and make them play in the North in December or January, and you don't think that's a massive advantage for you to practice in it and get ready for it?
Yeah.
That's asinine.
It doesn't make any sense to me either. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Brent Venables was introduced to the faithful in Norman yesterday. He's the new head coach at Oklahoma, which kind of leads me to the point here that you wanted to make, that you think that
I made it yesterday.
College football dynasty
could
be on the brink of death.
Could be over. I look at Clemson. And I look at it from a multitude of reasons. And I say, look, it was a good run. But it's why it's such a delicate balance every year, year in, year out, with recruiting and everything else. And you got to get it right. And that's why these coaches, when they leave and they get their bag of money, you can't fault them. Because the pressure's unbelievable to win. And when you don't, it could pull the plug in a hurry. I think Clemson's on the verge of being a team that been there, did that, but won't do it again for quite a while. You lose a guy that was the highest paid assistant in college football for a reason. And he was a main reason why your defense was top of the charts in terms of the top five in college football for a lot of years. And that made a difference when you were competing for national championships. You swung and missed at your quarterback. And not that mistakes don't happen and you evaluate the wrong way, can't be. But in the case of Clemson, coupled with the fact your conference isn't great, the SEC just got stronger, you can win your conference. You can try and get in. But to have that, when you talk about Dabo and you talk about what Clemson was for the last 5 years, and you go from Deshaun to Trevor Lawrence, and you go from competing every year for a national championship almost, but also from a recruiting standpoint, every year being one of the top three teams in the country recruiting-wise, and now you say, well, more kids are going to want to go to the SEC. More kids are going to look at harder Texas and Oklahoma because now they're in the greatest conference in college football. I lost my DC, who was my right-hand man, my Robin to my Batman, that helped me do so much. And you start thinking about it if you're Dabo going, it was a great run, but in my mind, I'm asking the question. I'm not saying unequivocally it's over, but it sure does look like they're headed for a hell of a turn the wrong way.
The pushback that I have there is they're in the ACC. It doesn't seem like there's anybody ready in the ACC to take their throne. They did have a down year this year because they didn't have a great quarterback, but they also had a very good defense. And if you go back like in the last 4 or 5 years in terms of like the recruiting cycle that we're currently in, always a top 10 recruiting class. Now, forecasting that going forward is what you're doing.
Yes.
If the SEC is the end-all, be-all, it'll be interesting to see what those recruiting classes do. My dad, who never sends me like hot sports takes, he randomly texted me yesterday and said Dabo Swinney to be the new head coach of the Texans. I was like, what? Absolutely
so
not.
So you and I had that conversation a couple days ago when I said, remember when he was one of the hot names, as long as Deshaun was there, to be the next coach of the Texans.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, as much as he said, I'm never leaving Clemson, now with all the mass exodus and all these coaches getting a lot more money than he's making, you know, I could see stranger things happen than if Oregon, if Chip Kelly leaves, or some program that's still on the cusp but has all the resources of Phil Knight and Nike and the campus and a big bag of money to give you everything you ever wanted, that he could take the home run deal for a couple more years and it wouldn't be at Clemson.
I wonder if that's the case if Deshaun stays. Like, Dabo's not taking the Texans job unless his quarterback's Deshaun, right?
And, well, you also have complete confidence, unlike anybody else, that you would hope would have conversations, that they would have a multitude of conversations before he would even take the job or that Deshaun would agree to stay.
You mentioned the Oregon job. Chip Kelly's the betting favorite at plus 150. Kalani Sitake, who's the BYU coach, plus 400. Justin Wilcox, plus 500. Brian Harsin, plus 700. And Chris Peterson's plus 800. I believe the best coach there is Chris Peterson. I just don't know if he's ever going to coach again. And if Chip Kelly can go back to Oregon, where Oregon was at its high point, it makes a lot of sense if he's the next head coach for the Ducks.
If he still got it, right? Because, you know what, for as hot as he was when he left Oregon the first time to take a dabble in or two in the NFL with the Niners and Eagles, he's fallen off mightily. And then everybody thought he could get back in the college game and he can resurrect his career as well as the next university. And UCLA's okay.
He's done a good job at UCLA. He hadn't done a great job.
Right.
Three wins, four wins, eight wins.
So in the same conference, you're going to say he can go back to where it all became the explosion of Chip Kelly and go back to Oregon and resurrect it? Maybe. But is his offense still going to be as effective? Is it still going to be the kind of thing that, you know, he was the new thing, the new toy in town that everybody couldn't compete with yet because they weren't ready for it? Now everybody's doing it. So is it going to make that big of a difference? I think they got you're right. Peterson's the outside chance that if he's ready to do it and he wants to do it, he'd be great. But I think that the other thing you got to understand is when all those kids that in the hotbed of recruiting in Hawaii come to the States, there's only a few schools that they would choose from. And because of the fact that you have guys that have had success at Oregon, like Mariota, who won the Heisman, Oregon, Oregon State, BYU are the three schools, for the most part, for Hawaiian kids. If you get a Hawaiian head coach that can really recruit Hawaii, that's a huge sleeper in that, and that's why I think that the BYU coach could get a lot more consideration than you might think.
He says his dream job is BYU, and I'm not sure he can win outside of BYU. He would be – I would love to see it. I would love to see how it plays out. I'm not as sold as some of the other candidates. Mario Cristobal headed to Miami. He's why the job is open. And Manny Diaz issuing a statement saying he was disappointed by the manner and the coaching search for Mario Cristobal. Yeah, but he also accepted the Temple job and then took the Miami job 2 weeks later. So it's a little bit like, okay, this is terrible, but I'm going to do it too. Like, I mean, wasn't a great way of handling it, but neither was Manny Diaz whenever he left Temple after 2 weeks.
But Jeremy, his quote didn't say, I could have handled things better when I had the same opportunity. All he did was point out the most current situation, which was, you were negotiating with your next head coach before I was fired as your current head coach.
That's true. Heisman finalist Bryce Young of Bama, Ohio State C.J. Stroud, Pitt quarterback Kenny Pickett, and Michigan defensive lineman Aiden Hutchinson. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Go out to the HRMP listener line. Tom, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees.
Good afternoon. I wanted to go back to the Texans draft pick and some of the things that you guys were saying. A couple of years ago, MIT published a paper on the draft, and effectively they did a paper that said football should be doing the exact same thing that baseball's doing in terms of money ball, and that trading back and bringing in more players per position is going to mathematically end up with a better result than trying to pick whoever is the physically best specimen, which is, I guess, what scouting departments have done forever. They kind of make the argument that if you need a right tackle and you have a high first-round draft pick, you trade back and you take one in the first round and you take one in the second round and then you take another one in the second round and let them compete, and you're almost always going to get a better outcome than if you just take the guy at the top of the draft.
appreciate the call. Thanks, Tom. And I love the premise.
Great.
I don't know if I would trade three right tackles, especially like unless you have a need there. Like if you're a team that's like on the cusp of being a winning team and a playoff team, but you really need a corner, right? That's when it makes sense to me. I love the idea of trading down because now you have more chances. You have more darts at the dartboard. But whenever you have as many holes as the Texans, I don't care what the position is. Like, trade down, accumulate as many picks as you can, but then take the best available according to your scouts.
Yeah, I agree, too. And I think there's a time and a place for everything, right? Just like there's a time for analytics and there's a time for the eye test. When you're a team that's closer to being on the cusp of really winning and winning big, that's when you just focus and dial in on one position group and the top players at that position, and that's all you focus on. When you're the Houston Texans, it makes so much sense for so many reasons we've alluded to in the last couple of shows in terms of just getting as many assets that you can so that you have competition at every position. Just like when we said Davis Mills may be a lifetime backup, he may never play a down more in the NFL as a starting quarterback, but you take your swing there, and then you bring in another guy the next year and another guy the next year if you have to, and hopefully you hit on one of the three because that's all you need. It's the same thing with position groups and from a lesser extent because they just got to do their job. They don't have to be outstanding like a quarterback, like a franchise quarterback, but if you keep doing that with all the position groups, sooner or later you're going to hit the right guys that become longtime starters for you.
It's why the Patriots were drafting quarterbacks almost every year even though they had Tom Brady, because why not? One, if Tom Brady gets hurt, you have somebody to play, and then also you can trade him in a couple of years and get good return on your investment because a fourth rounder becomes a second, whatever. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. When we return, a huge concern I have with Nick Caserio. I want to get Joel's thoughts on it as well. That's next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.